Good morning. We've been traveling around the country on and off for 13 years now, since we came out with the first documentary film about what had happened to our country. Everyone looks around and they see, boy, things have changed over your lifetime. But a lot of times they haven't put all the pieces together to realize how purposeful the change has been. It's not an accident that America is collapsing from within. It has been a purposeful, premeditated plan over 100 years in the making to slowly grind us down, to penetrate the institutions of influence, the church, the families, the schools, media, Hollywood, to influence us and change us as a people from within. And boy, have they been successful. it's kind of amazing how far we've come. A couple of verses. What I'm going to talk about this morning, both of these are going to be a little bit different than a normal Sunday school class. But as Christians, the Bible tells us we need to understand the times. We need to know what is going on, and so we can protect those we love, our children, our grandchildren, from the deceit and lies that are out there, because they are everywhere, as we see. And a couple of scriptures that will go with what I'm going to be talking about in Sunday school here is in Ephesians 6, it says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, the tricks of the devil." That's why it's a spiritual battle we're in, so you have to combat it at that level, or you will lose every single engagement you are involved in. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." That's what this is about. What you believe is your religion. So everything is religious. They try to act like we have religion and they have science or something, but everything they believe is their religion. And they have less science to go with what they're pushing. But another key verse in this, I'm going to be talking about fifth generation warfare. Warfare has changed dramatically over the centuries and how engagement was. But fifth generation warfare that we've entered over the last couple decades it's a battle for your heart and your mind. It's weapons of propaganda, indoctrination, deceit. Repetition in advertising, repetition in messages being sent to you on TV, social media, everything. They've learned it's far more effective if you can brainwash the people into submission where they willfully go along than trying to have to control them with an iron fist. That's much harder to do, especially in a country like America where we're still free and we're still armed. They realize, okay, let's just subvert them from within. We will capture the hearts and minds, especially of the young people. And if we get the young people, we'll have everything because they are the future. And we've kind of forgotten that sometimes. We haven't been as purposeful as we should have been keeping our young children on our side, teaching them what the Bible has to say about everything. And not just the Bible stories, but understanding why we believe what we believe. And in doing so, we've lost a huge percentage. 90, last I've read in the surveys, about 90% of our young people raised in church turned their back on what they were taught after 1 year of college. That's how poorly we've prepared them. So we need to repent of that. But the other verse I want to bring up is John 8:44. And this is why this fifth generation warfare is being used by Satan. The technologies that have allowed them to come after us, where we have nonstop messaging. It's coming at us, the billboards, the radio, the TV, our phones are just constantly ding, ding, ding messages. Social media that penalizes you if you say something that's not in the end by people attacking you. Probably most of them are bots that are just knowing, oh, that wasn't the party line, so we're going to admonish you publicly so you'll never do that again. Or if you go along with the party line, then heart, heart, follow, follow, we like you. And they've learned how to do, but that's what they have done. And they've done it so successfully Most Christians are scared to death to stand up for the truth. And we can't do that because the truth will set people free. John 8:44 says this, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him." That's why it's all lies we get. It's never straight. There's not one thing you're going to get in the mainstream that is straight shooting. Here's the facts. Here's the way it is. It's all twisted. It's all half-truths. It's all twisting of something that sounds true, but it's not. Why? Because there's no truth in him. We're at war in a spiritual battle. Satan is their commander-in-chief, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And then it goes on. "When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." That's their commander-in-chief. They're really good at following him because they don't even have a choice almost. If you're lost, you're spiritually blind. You don't understand things. And so you're just ripe for the picking for him to seduce you into things that sound good but are not good. In Proverbs it says, "There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death." Especially you young people in here, listen to me. God's telling us there, and he has that verse twice in Proverbs. There is a way that seems right, but it's not. It ends in death. So don't ever be confident in your own, "Well, I know what I'm doing. Everything's fine. You know, everybody's doing this, whatever." Listen to your parents. Listen to the pastor. Listen to people that are older and wiser, that have already walked the different paths that are out there. And they know, no, the bridge is out. Don't go down this road. Don't go down it. The bridge is out. Only a fool continues down a road when someone who's already been down that road says, "Don't go. Don't go." So fifth generation warfare is very just subliminal, very hidden in many ways, where it's just not in your face. It's so much more effective than tanks and guns and bombs and things that you can see. And when those things are happening, you know you're at war, and so you're prepared. There was a man named Lord Bertrand Russell, and he was part of this globalist movement for world government, for total control. And 100 years ago, he said this, and this is showing that, and that's about when fifth generation warfare got going. They started perfecting it back in the 1920s and 30s. But he said, "We'll know we've been successful in educating the children when they are convinced that snow is black." Do you understand that? It's when everything is exactly opposite of the truth. We'll know then. He was good friends with John Dewey, the father of our government schools, and influenced tremendously by those people. But that's they just told you right there. How are we going to know when we've been successful when everybody thinks exactly the opposite of the truth? Well, that's from Satan, obviously, because he knows exactly how God intended everything to be, and he is not stopping until everything has been flipped on its head. That's what's so amazing. Over the years, I've been shocked how the communists and the Marxists, they know our morality is our greatest strength. They know back in the 1950s, we've got to push pornography and obscenity if we want this thing to collapse. And I read through those goals. I'm sure you have too, the 45 current communist goals from 1950s. And you see that and you're like, they understand pornography will collapse a civilization, but most Americans don't get that. "Oh, it's my own business. It doesn't affect anybody but myself. It's none of your business what I'm doing." And the communists go, "No, no, push that out there. And this thing will fall to the ground and we won't have to fire a shot." First generation warfare, just to kind of go back and give the perspective, that was the old line and column tactics, like in the Civil War, where you just line up two rows of guys and, you know, blow the trumpet and then you shoot each other. I don't understand that strategy. I don't know whoever came up with it, but it doesn't sound like a good one to me. But that's when warfare started. It was very just in your face. We're just attacking each other and whoever is alive at the end, they won. And then it went into the second generation was when they started to get rifling inside the muskets so that you all of a sudden you could be far more accurate. And the war started to spread out a little bit because you could be back half mile away with your sniper rifle and start nailing people. So it started to spread out. Also at that time, the machine guns and different things were invented. Third generation warfare was when they started to have more speed, stealth, and surprise involved in things. Guerrilla warfare really became predominant, like the Navy SEALs type of operation where you're going in underwater and coming up behind the enemy and they don't even know you're there. They started to get much more strategic in things. And then fourth generation warfare was when it became very decentralized. It wasn't necessarily this army against this army. It was hard to even tell the difference between civilians and the soldiers. And a perfect example of that is terrorism, where it's not necessarily a soldier for a country that's in the military or something. It's an individual person going and blowing themselves up to create terror and havoc. So things started to change. But then, like I said, fifth generation warfare is where we are today. A couple of things that led up to this that are important to understand. Back in the late 1800s, there was a man named Cecil Rhodes. Anybody ever heard of him? Have you ever heard of Rhodes Scholarships? It's the same guy. He was a young man that had just graduated from college over in England, and he just had a lust for fame, fortune, and power. And he heard they were discovering diamonds down in Africa. And so at 23, he went down there to get involved and hoping to somehow become wealthy. And amazingly, by the age of 30, he was one of the main shareholders of the diamond mines in Africa. Just an amazing turn of events. And while he was down there, he met a family called the Rothschilds family from England. They were the ones that were building the diamond mines and everything. Well, he became super rich, got to know them, and he had a vision for the world that he was given to him. And he says it in his own words. He said, "The day I joined the Masonic Order, I came home and had a vision that just came before my eyes." And he wrote it down. Here's what the vision was in his own words. "The idea gleaming and dancing before one's eyes like a will-o'-the-wisp at last frames itself into a plan. Why should we not form a secret society but with one objective, the furtherance of the British Empire and the bringing of the whole world under British rule for the recovery of the United States and for making the Anglo-Saxon race but one empire?" And in his book, which was called Confession of Faith, it wasn't a Christian faith, he said, "We're working for the religious, political, and economic unification of the world." That sound familiar if you've read Revelations? That's what it was. Well, the Rothschilds had the same goal. We want to control the world. So what they would do is they would set up meetings for Cecil Rhodes. And this guy must have been an incredible communicator, because they say at the meetings, the Rothschilds would invite 5-6 super wealthy families that they knew. They knew all the families of the world that were super rich. And he would present this vision of world government. And they said by the end of the luncheon, when Cecil Rhodes was done talking, most of the time, all the families there would say, "Our entire family fortune's in. We want to be part of this." So by the end of the 1800s, they've already captured almost all the wealth of the world that's on their side to implement this idea. And they said, "We're going to start buying up the universities, the newspapers, and creating arguments for world government and spread them worldwide so that it's appealing. Like, oh, there'll be no more war if we had world government. There'll be peace." And so they started to do that, and that's in the late 1800s. What's amazing is his first group was called the Society of the Elect. Very humble man. And in that group, every group you've ever heard of came from that group. The wealth, like I said, the wealthy of the world came there, and would sit in on these meetings, and then like John D. Rockefeller went over to one of those meetings and he said, this is it. We want to be in on this. So he came back to America in 1921 and started the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberger Group and the World Economic Forum. And every group you've ever heard of came from the Society of the Elect. It came from that vision, and it's all been unified with that vision, the religious, political, and economic unification of the world. So that he's the one that had that wicked vision. He then, when he died in his 40s, an alcoholic and a pedophile in his own writings, he talks about, he loved that. But he left his fortune. The other side is so satanically committed to their agenda. It's kind of shocking. They dump it all, like George Soros and people like that. They're going to spend every penny they have by the day they die for the cause. It's a wicked cause, but that they're so committed in a satanic way. Well, Cecil Rhodes left his fortune to the Rhodes Scholarship Foundation, and he said, we're going to get the best and the brightest of the world on our side. And so they look every year, and they still do 100 years later. They find the sharpest, highest test scored kids throughout the world, and they say, we'll pay for your college. Wherever you want to go, we'll pay for everything. And we're not asking anything in return. And then when they graduate, they have all the other Rhodes scholars help them become successful in life. And if they get to the point where, yeah, they're a governor or a senator or head of a Fortune 500 company, then they come to them and say, remember, we paid for your college. We're going to let you in on the inner circle of the inner circle. And, of course, that's flattering. You're like, yeah, we've got a little group and we have a plan and we're going to let you in on it. So only the Rhodes Scholars that become really are hugely successful ever learn about the Society of the Elect and their plan for world government. But that's why all these Fortune 500 companies and stuff, why are they doing things so crazy and stuff? This is a lot of the reason why. Because a lot of them were Rhodes Scholars. President Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. Many of our Supreme Court justices have been Rhodes Scholars. And so they get them in, and then they, again, you made their whole life for them, so they're totally loyal to you. And it's kind of a privilege to be on the inner circle of things. It's like, wow, I'm on the inner. Well, that, again, was happening in the 1800s. But along with their plan, where they're wanting to influence people, some books came out that were key to help them realize, okay, this is going to be a better way to manipulate, to deceive, to propagandize. In 1895, right as they're getting these plans going, a book came out called The Crowd by Gustave Le Bon. And this book, Gustave Le Bon talks about, he had studied and realized, if you can get people into a crowd, you can get them to do things they would never do on their own. That's why is our culture so segmented and divided? They want everybody in their own crowd. They don't care what kind of crowd it is, because he talks in the book then, and once you get them formed into a crowd, here's how to pop yourself up as the leader of a crowd. He said, because one thing always happens in a crowd, it demands a leader. It has to have a leader. So if you can pop yourself up as the leader, then you're in total control of the crowd. You can get them to burn down buildings like we saw a couple summers ago or whatever. Once you hype the crowd up, again, they will go do things they normally wouldn't on their own have done. They won't burn down their own neighborhoods and stuff. But if you're using psychological manipulation against them, you might be able to persuade them to do that. Then in 1928, a book came out called Propaganda by Edward Bernays. And he was a genius of marketing, so much so that our government took notice, and other countries of the world governments took notice. He started simply with just on Madison Avenue, their marketing products. The pork industry in America came to him and said, we're having trouble getting people to eat bacon for breakfast because they don't think it's good for them. What can we do? And he realized, okay. He was just a master of manipulation. Let me think about that. And what he did is he took a survey right then of America. Who is the most respected person in America? And he found out it was the doctors. So he had commercials where doctors in their white coats would get up there and say, we recommend you having bacon every breakfast for breakfast. It's so good for you. And so he took advantage of, he knew people respected these doctors. So if I pay them to tell them a lie, they're still going to go believe it and do it. and the pork industry took off in America. Then the tobacco companies came to him, said, "We have a big problem. Over 50% of our population, the women, won't smoke because they think it's gross and nasty. What do we do?" He said, "Okay, let me think about that." And he went down to Madison Avenue in New York there, and he hired all the supermodels back then of the world in the 20s, and he had them march through the streets all smoking in their beautiful dresses and everything, and he called them torches of liberty. They're going to set you free from mankind and every, I mean, it was a total feminist push to, from the patriarchy. These torches of liberty will set you free from the patriarchy. And sure enough, smoking started spreading all over America. But again, like I said, our government and stuff started to notice, and they hired him. And they, all the governments of the world started to hire him, where that was most of his work. How can you get our citizens to do what we want them to do? And he wrote a whole papers on it and stuff, saying all you have to do is cloak it in patriotism and they will do anything that you want them to do. They'll go to war. That's useless if you say it's unpatriotic not to go to war. And so he helped them, even before his book came out, he had helped them in World War I convince Americans to go off to war when Americans didn't want to go to war. And it was a useless war that wasn't doing anything. And Europe lost tens of millions of boys, and we lost many too. But that's when it all started changing, when they realized, that's when our own government went full bore into propagandizing us so we would just submit to whatever they wanted us to do willfully, because that's an easy way to control a population when you don't have to force them, especially, again, a population that is armed. That's the best way to do it. And on it goes. There were so many different books and things written that kind of outlined the plan. In 1932, a book called Towards Soviet America was written by William Z. Foster, who was the head of the Communist Party. And he said, if you want to turn America into the Soviet Union, here's what you need to do. And if you read that book today, almost 100 years later, they've done every single thing in there. They took over the schools and they did the different things to totally, from the inside, subvert us and to make us think, oh, socialism's a good idea, it's fair. They knew, again, if you teach that to the young people long enough, a generation's going to rise up, like right now, that thinks it's good. The last poll, a year or so ago, of 35 and under, 70% said they wished America was socialist. And 35% said we wish America was communist. And I couldn't believe that. I've studied communism for decades. And I was like, oh my goodness. It shows they don't know what either one of those things mean, but they've been brainwashed to think they are good. And that's where we stand on some of that. Some of the things that we have been through lately, some of the fifth generation warfare that we've all lived through the last few years is of course, COVID. COVID was fifth generation warfare. It's manipulating you to think something's going on that's different than what really is going on, that there's no solution except a vaccine, and so we're not going to have time to test it, but you need to take it. All that was classic. The mask, putting on the mask, that's just a symbolic gesture to show you're submissive. If you read medical journals, which I did immediately, I have a lung condition. And so when it first came out, no one knew what was going on. So I started studying, does a mask do anything? No, every medical journal I found that had done a study says it does zero, doesn't even, zero difference for a virus if you have a mask on or not. So I'm like, I know they know this, they're doctors. Why are they telling us this? Michael Yon, who is one of the vice president of Pfizer, he said that's, and he's also an MD, he said, that's when he knew right at the beginning of COVID, something's going on. He goes, because I went to the same medical school as Fauci did. He was in my class. I know these people, and I know they know this is a lie. Why are they telling it to us? Because we all know, no, masks don't do anything at all. And so that then the 6-foot social distancing, you go, does a virus have a 6-foot leash on it or something? That's fifth generation warfare. When they tell you things that are complete opposite of the truth to confuse you. And many times, do you remember when Fauci first came out? He said, no, don't wear a mask. It doesn't do anything. Then yes, wear a mask. And then you need to wear two masks. A lot of people go, these people are idiots. They don't know what to do. No, it's total strategy. If you read Marxist propaganda and what they talk about, I've read so many of their books, they say always put mixed messages out so everyone is in total confusion. You tell them, yes, do this, don't do this, and everyone gives up and they just submit to whatever. Okay, put a mask on. Okay, I'll do it. Because they're so confused because they've heard so many different things, they're not sure what to do, so they feel like they couldn't possibly understand it, so I better just obey. It's total strategy. It's not an accident or ignorance or stupidity. It's purposeful. The lockdowns. One thing's interesting is as I've studied their agenda and read all the main books since Karl Marx, the Communist Manifesto forward, that they wrote about what they wanted to do, once you know their agenda, then it's so much easier to, when something's happening, you go, okay, I know what their agenda is, so whatever this is going on is going to accomplish some part of that, or they'll use it for that. And one of the things they've talked about for decades, they hate small business in America. They hate it. The fact that you can go start a small business and be independent and successful and have your own employees and do your own thing, they cannot stand that. That's why they hate the free enterprise system in America, and they try to continue to pass regulations, pass laws that make it tough to compete with big business, because they don't want competition. John D. Rockefeller said 100 years ago, competition is a sin. We have to eliminate all of it. And they were the ones that owned all the big companies, so they bought off the politicians. We'll give you campaign donations if when you get in there, you'll pass laws that regulate businesses more. Big business loves regulation. You think, oh, they wouldn't want to. No, they love it because they know the small guy can't afford to do all the regulations. And who's going to pay for all the cost of fulfilling the regulations? You are. They just raise their prices. When you have a monopoly, you just pass on all taxes, all regulation fees onto the consumer. So you pay 100% of it, and they know that. So that's why they love. But the lockdowns happen, I go, I mean, just common sense. In my little town I lived in, Lowe's and Walmart are allowed to be open. Stores that sometimes have maybe 1,000 people inside. But the little guy down the street that has one or two people, and he's not, you know, right there, no, this is rotten. It should have been all big businesses are closed and we're just going to allow, you know, go to the small businesses if it was really something you could run and hide from. But you can't run and hide from a virus. That's another thing as I studied. What you do is prepare for the virus. You cannot get away from it. And so the longer you prolong it, it just drags it out longer. You want to go, okay, what might help me from this virus? But they kept all the pre-treatments away from people, right? Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D. Just, guys, everybody go out in the sun. Well, what did they say? No, you locked it. You stay in your house. Who knows how many people suffer just because you stay in your house for 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to get sick because your body is not having to defend off anything. So your immune system gets so weak, you're going to catch anything that goes around instantly. Everyone should have been outside exercising and going about life as usual. Those that are really high risk, you know, 80 and over, that maybe have multiple health problems, we try to protect them if at all possible. But give them the pre-treatment stuff. All of them start on vitamin D today and zinc and all the things that are proven to work. And other countries did them, and their death rates were just a fraction of what the death rates in America. We're supposed to have the big modern medical system. We lost more people than anyone because it was purposeful. It was fifth generation warfare. Of course, the shot. When they tell you this is safe and effective, that's a lie. When it's an experimental thing they've never done before on human beings. And now that we know, even the test, the limited test they did do, Pfizer, those documents that they wanted to hide for 75 years, a judge demanded of them to be released, and Naomi Wolf, who's a Democrat lawyer, she's gone through them all, and they knew. When they told pregnant women to take this shot, they knew 80% of the women who were pregnant when they took the shot lost their baby. They knew that. So that's when you know, okay, it's evil. This isn't a misguiding idiots or whatever. When Rachel Walensky got up there and said, we recommend pregnant women at any stage in pregnancy, this is totally safe and effective, she knew. And they've checked the dates on everything. They knew 80% loss of pregnancy when they said that. But that's what we're up against. This is a battle. We're at war as any hot war has ever been. It's 10 times hotter. But half the people don't even know what's going on. They're just, oh, I'm too busy for that. Climate change is fifth generation warfare. Completely. They know we all care about the environment. We all care about clean air, clean water, and stewarding our resources. They know that. So it's the perfect vehicle. All they do have to do is define what it means to be an environmentalist and have it all be things that help out their agenda. And then they've got total control because people go, yeah, I care about the environment. But the three founding things, the founding building blocks of climate change are what? First one is CO2 is a pollutant. If you didn't go to government schools, that's laughable. CO2 is plant food. And we don't have near enough of it in the atmosphere. Right now it's 400 parts per million. The optimum level of CO2 for everything that is green is 1,600 parts per million. We're at the very bottom of the scale. That's why greenhouse growers pump carbon dioxide into their greenhouses so they can double, triple, and quadruple it. When you can quadruple it, plant growth doubles. An oak tree will grow to maturity in 25 years instead of 50 years. And you get twice the amount of produce from the same plants. It's a God just designed. It's amazing. So the same tomato plant, if you can four times it, you're going to get twice the number of tomatoes as the plant that's in 400 parts per million off the same plant because it's fertilizer. But they call their movement the green movement. That's fifth generation warfare. No, we're green. When they're trying to cut carbon dioxide emissions, which is the greatest blessing for everything that is green. And we're at the close to the bottom. When it drops below 150 parts per million, everything green dies, which means everybody dies because we live on what's green or what eats what is green. But it's a lie. Then they tell us what's another lie of the climate nonsense. Warming is bad. Anyone, if you've traveled, I've stood down on the equator in Ecuador and you go, wow, it's really hot down here. But when you look around at the biodiversity of plants and animals, you realize life loves warmth. It's unbelievable the amount of animals and plants and things. And then you go up to Alaska or northern Canada, nothing can survive hardly. Cooling is the enemy of life. But it's always the opposite. That's brainwashing. When you've been taught the opposite of the truth, that you know, okay, it wasn't bad teaching, it was purposeful brainwashing. Because once you've been taught the opposite of the truth, it's hard to ever pull out of that because you've been brainwashed. But if we could do, which we can't, but if we could raise the global temperatures a degree or two, it would be a blessing. Canada then would have hundreds of millions of more acres they could farm. Russia would have hundreds of millions of more acres they could farm. And we would have so much food we wouldn't know what to do with it. It's a total lie. And on, there's so many things that we've lived through. Just the evolving redefinition of marriage and family and gender. That's fifth generation warfare. The whole transgender movement is to destroy young people, of course, which is horrible. But it's to make society so confused. You can't even be sure, is that a lady I'm going to go talk to, or is that a man? When you're not sure about a biological fact like that, then you're going to keep your mouth shut because you realize I'm just being quiet, which is what they want. Every man his own island where the only information you're getting is from the propaganda. And you're scared to even talk to anybody because you might say the wrong thing and they'll turn on you. How hateful. How could you say something like that? And so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. That's all totally purposeful. January 6th was an insurrection. I don't know if the other side knows what an insurrection is, but that's when you try to take over a country from within. And I know if anyone was ever planning to do that, you'd bring a weapon with you. At least one, maybe. Try to take over the United States of America. I think I'd bring at least one weapon with me. There's no weapons there. That was again a fifth generation warfare set up to control a narrative so that they would not take a look at the 2020 election, and they would just move things on and have a great tool to make everyone that is patriotic be scared to let anybody know they're patriotic. Because, oh, they might think I'm one of those people. When we know at least 20 FBI agents were in there and many other subversives purposefully stirring up the crowd. They know if you get a crowd going, you can get a lot of things done. But that was all purposeful. But the laughability of them labeling it insurrection when nobody had a weapon is crazy. Sun Tzu said 2,500 years ago, he said, all warfare is based on deception. And it sure is. And they've sought to brainwash us, and brainwashing is the art of making people do what you want them to do without being able to think, argue, or ask questions. It just, mind shuts down. What do you want me to do? Two masks? Oh, okay. Three masks? Oh, okay. They just do it. They've given up. They're so confused. Because everything they've taught, they've not been taught why. They've just been taught, this is the science. Okay. Everything came from nothing by accident. Okay. I guess if that can happen, anything can happen. So, okay. I mean, it's just blind submission to stupidity. And they call those things science. Like that's science, observational science. Yeah, everything came from nothing by accident. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. And that's where we are. But the danger is, I hear a lot of people on our side say, they aren't teaching the children anything. That's not a true statement. I wish that was true. You can recover from that. If you don't know anything, you can get a good book and all of a sudden you know something. They're teaching them the wrong thing. They're brainwashing their minds so that they can't come over to our side because it's too far a bridge to cross when they've been taught, you know, warming is bad. To convince them that warming is good, it's just too much. But so how are they? What's the channels they've used to propaganda? Of course, the educational system. That's been the key one. They've gone into the seminaries starting back in the 1930s, and they wanted to get control of the church because they knew if we can convince pastors to have the church be a social club instead of a organization that's following Jesus Christ and obeying his commands, that we're going to be able to funnel all the energies of the church into accomplishing many of our left-wing agenda items. And that's what they've done. I mean, this type of church is rare, and I know you know that. If you've been around visiting other ones, it's shocking how nothing can be going on there. Or the pastor's just saying nothing. Like, what are you doing up there? I hope you're not getting paid. I mean, they're just total. It's like a little pep talk. And then, oh, have a good week. And smile up at God and tell him thank you. Bye-bye. You know, whatever. So, but that was key because they knew the church was their number one enemy. And they knew if they could break apart the families, then the children will be very easy to capture. If the parents are too busy for their own children, we'll be able to sucker them over to our side. The news media, of course, is a key instrument of brainwashing. Social media. A lot of the social media companies, I think most of them are just a front for the CIA and the FBI and stuff. It came out years ago that Google, the funding for Google came from the CIA. So it wouldn't surprise me, I don't know this as a fact, that all those are just fronts to gather information on everybody and put up a Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, let him be a billionaire and enjoy a nice life. But we're using this to collect data on everyone. Like Snowden told us over a decade ago, they have a file on every single one of you in the NSA, every text, every phone call, every email, every search on the internet, every picture you've ever posted, every place you've ever been, every friend you've ever had. It's all there. So if they ever choose to go, you're an enemy, they open up the file and they go, who is he? And they'll know better who you are than you know because they have a record of everything you've ever done, everything you've ever searched. If you've looked up something bad on the internet, they know it. And so does God. But it's a No, but I'm saying it's like, that's what the guy from Google said. He goes, we will be as God. That's what he said when he started it. We will know everything about every person on the planet. They're the ones now, Google, that tell the CDC when there's a sickness breaking out in an area or whatever. They know before anybody else because they see who's searching. What do you do for cold symptoms or whatever? And they, oh, Phoenix, Arizona, there's going to be an outbreak right now. Tonight, thousands of people were searching for, what do you do for a cough or whatever? And they tell that to the CDC. They funnel it straight to them. Oh, down here, you might need extra resources. So they instant response, the second it happens, they already know about it. And that's what they're doing. The big corporations and their advertisements, the commercial during the football game, it was propaganda. It was, I mean, they've learned how to do things. That wasn't propaganda, it was just a football game. Oh, yeah. They're just getting little bits of information in you to change your world. That's why America has changed so much. Just the world I grew up in, the late 60s and 70s, I'm just telling you, the church was so different than it is today. The culture was so different. Every lost man almost lived like a Christian in public. Even though he might, on his own time, do things that are bad, but he was ashamed of them. He would not have done them. He wouldn't have never, ever cursed in front of someone. When I was a kid, I'll never forget this. I was probably 8 years old. I was waiting for my mother outside a department store and just standing on the sidewalk. And there was a man on the other side of the doorway. And he was talking to a guy. And he was just tattooed head to toe, which back then was totally unusual. I'd never seen it before. I was like, man, what's that? And while he was talking to the gentleman, he used the word hell. And a couple minutes went by, and I'm just standing there hoping she comes out. And all of a sudden, he looks over, and he sees me, and he walks right over to me. He puts his face right down in my face, and that's why I remember this so clearly, because I was scared to death. I didn't know what was getting ready to happen. And he looks at me, and he said this, son, I'm so sorry for saying that. I didn't see you standing there. That's how much we've changed. He used the word hell, and that's how he normally talked. But he saw there's a child. You don't say that in front of a child. And he came over and apologized to me. We've changed, all of us, because it's such a gradual change, and it's so just consistently going the wrong direction. And we're still just as far from the other side, but we don't realize we've all moved so far. Dropping the standards. Well, that's not that big a deal. Nothing's that big a deal. Well, of course, to the world, nothing's a big deal. Satan wants no standards of any kind in anything ever. And we've just gone with the flow, keeping our distance from them so we can still say, oh, there's a difference. but you know, we've gone where we're way past where they were, the other side in the 70s. We've gone so far past them, it's not even funny. Well, a couple things here real quick, and things you can do to make a difference. Our country has been in crises before, especially at its founding, when the most powerful country in the world with the biggest military in the world wanted to take us over. And the pastors and the farmers said, I think that we're on the side of right. We need to stand up and we better pray God helps us because they're much stronger than we are. But I think the fundamental thing to do here as a Christian is you need to make sure as you analyze your own life, are you standing up for the truth? Are you speaking the truth? Are you living the truth? We need to be consistent with what we say, but what we believe. If we're moral people, they need to see we're moral people. We're not watching things or listening to things that are inconsistent. We're not reading things that are inconsistent. Where our kids, our grandkids, our neighbors see, yeah, they say they're a Christian, but they're really not different than I am. We need to be different. That's the light. And as the world gets darker and darker, our light is going to shine brighter and brighter if we're truly different. And here's the number one reason why you want to be really different. Or they can just spot you a mile away. That guy's different. You know why? It's so when we do share the gospel, it makes sense. Because they realize you are different. I go, yeah, it's Jesus. And then they cannot deny he exists because my life is proof that he is there because I'm different. I just talk different, act different, try to be different as I can in every area. And when I'm not, I would you forgive me for that? I shouldn't have said that. We're instantly repentant of that because we're trying to make Jesus look good. That's your entire job here on this earth. Every day, if anyone was to analyze any of your days, they'd go, that person's different. they're doing different than the world. And you could tell them, here's why. Here's why we're different. But in 1776, I just love this little paragraph here. There was a paper that was handed around the colonies called The American Crisis, which is very similar to what we're going through today. And here's just a little bit of this. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of men and women. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. Of course it is. What was the cost of us being set free from our sins? Blood. What was the cost of us being set free from the tyranny of England? Blood. It's a high price. And we didn't cherish it like we should have over the last 50 years where just, oh, nothing's ever going to happen to America. Come on, just relax, have fun. Everything's fine. And we're waking up to see, no, it's not going to be fine. So I just encourage you as Christians too. I think the world's so desperate for our example of also standing against tyranny. And Romans 13 talks about obeying the just authorities. But in America, it's so wonderful. Our founders knew the Bible and they knew history. And they knew, oh, we're going to make things different. We're going to put the government under the people where they're public servants. So they're not over the people. So they don't have a king, some just unjust person they have to obey. And then they wrote a declaration declaring, okay, these rights are from God. So they cannot be infringed upon. Do you understand that? So the freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly, the stuff they tried to do during COVID, they had no authority to do that. You cannot stop the freedom of assembly if you want to come to church. Sorry, that's outside your jurisdiction. So you're not disobeying them. They have outstepped out of their constitutional oath, which means they're not even a legitimate power. When I was a representative in Idaho, I got appointed by the governor, which was an amazing story. But I got appointed, and a week or so had gone by, and the Speaker of the House called me and said, Curtis, you haven't come down and taken the oath. I said, oh, I didn't know that was a rush. He goes, you are not a representative until you take the oath. I said, oh, I'll come right down. And I realized right there, the oath is what made me a representative. And the day I break that oath, I am no longer a legitimate representative. If I swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic, and then I go against that, and I pass laws that are defying your constitutional right, then that's an illegitimate power. We do not have a king in America. So it's not just blind allegiance. Well, the government said to do this. No. And what's so neat is our founders outlined it so we would see these are from God. So even if 250 years goes by, they can't all of a sudden pass a law saying you don't have the right to bear arms anymore. You don't have the right to free speech anymore. No. Because they outlined in the Constitution just the most logical areas that God has given us rights. But you can't take those away ever then. It's not like, well, today we're going to change. No. If they do, they've broken their oath and they're not legitimate. So we need to stand for the truth. We need to hate what is evil. We need to defend the defenseless. We need to expose the lies. We need to build back what's been broken down. We need to reinforce what remains. We need to put back the ancient landmarks. Like the Bible says, don't remove the ancient landmarks. Don't keep changing the way you do what you do. We need to invent creative solutions to the tyranny they're trying to push on us, like with the CBDCs and the digital currency and stuff. In America, we need to go, okay, they're trying to force us into that. We don't want that. And so creative people need to go, okay, what's a way we can buy and sell without that? And we need to be looking to be creatively solve these problems. We need to disconnect from the system. Turn off your TV. Delete your social media account. Go meet face to face with people. Look them in the eyes. Give them a hug. All this just superficial nonsense. I have 2,000 friends on Facebook. No, you don't have a single friend. If you're not meeting with someone regularly and looking them in the eyes, that's not a friend. It might be an acquaintance or someone, oh, I used to know or whatever. That's not a friend. Is someone you, on a regular basis, at least a couple of times a month, we get together with and have a lunch or something and talk to them and give them a hug. That's a friend. That's a friend. Other, you might have friends that from the past, but they're not, that's not a current friend. If you're not spending time with them regularly, that's not the kind of friendship we need. The eyes are the windows to the soul. If you're not looking into their soul, you're not going to be able to be a very good friend because you don't really know what's going on. A little heart on the thing doesn't tell you anything. They could be heartbroken right then, but they're just doing that because they don't want you to know that they're upset about something. But when you look them in the eyes, you can tell instant, what's wrong? Are you okay? Can I help you? And that's the way to be a good friend. We need to defund the enemy. Quit shopping at the big stores that are using their funds to destroy our country. Shop locally. Be right where you are. Pull your circle in as close as you can. Where you get your food. Where you get the things that are essential for you. As close to you as possible. So you're blessing your neighbor. God told us to love your neighbor. Right? That's the best way to do it. Well, their perception's a little bit higher. That's fine. That money is staying in your community to make your community richer, which helps everyone in your community. We need to do that. And then we need to share the gospel. Right now, it's the best time ever because people are looking for hope. Everyone is concerned of what's going on and all the wars and the pandemics and the whatever. And Bill Gates tells us another big pandemic is coming in 2025. That's what he says. And he says it's going to be way worse than COVID and it's going to affect the children. And yeah, he just knows that somehow. Isn't that amazing? Which says that's probably what they're planning. So we're in rough times, but God had each of you born for such a time as this. So if you're not doing anything with your time, whatever he puts you on this earth to do is not happening. You need to be doing it. And if you don't know what it is, ask. But I know it's you're supposed to be living the truth. So when you share the truth, it's consistent. And that's the least anybody can do. If you were to influence one person every 4 or 5 months and spend time with them and share the gospel with them and invite them to church and do things with them, things would change so rapidly. When we're always hoping it's from the top down, some big thing's going to happen. It's when nothing happens. All solutions are from the bottom up. Always, you study history. The people that have rotted this country from within were from the bottom up. 120 years ago, a handful of them said, we got to get in and subvert this thing from the inside. You go into education, I'll go into media, you go start working in Hollywood and keep hiring fellow travelers and like-minded comrades. And over time, if we're committed, I think we're going to make a difference. And they did. But we have the truth. I mean, they didn't. They had a lie, but they were committed to a lie, and it was still very successful. We have the truth, and I just want to encourage you in that. Don't be deceived. Turn off the propaganda because you're being influenced. We all are. If you sit in front of propaganda long enough, you will be influenced. And then redirect your schedule to go, God, what would you have me to do? Am I doing all the things you put me on this earth to do? If not, would you please direct my path? And I'm willing to do what you want me to do instead of what I want to do. In the Sunday service, I'm going to talk about when I finally say, God, okay, I'm doing your thing. I'm tired of doing my thing. Just all the things he's done in my life that I'm just shocked by. But I realize, oh, I think he had a big plan for everybody, but we never wanted to let go. We always wanted to just tell him to bless what we're doing instead of going, no, what do you want me to be doing? And I'm glad that I did that at 32. But anyway, let me close in prayer, and then I think we're about done here. Dear God, I just thank you for your blessings. Thank you for the Bible, that we have truth, so we know what is true, we know what is lies, we know what the standards are to be, we know what pleases you, and we know what you hate. Please help us never to be involved in the things that you hate and always be doing things that are a blessing, that are pleasing in your eyes. Please bless this church here in this area to make a difference for you. And each person here, God, get a hold of their heart and redirect them if you need to or whatever to be able to allow them to be able to do all the amazing things you put them on this earth to do. And we love you. In Jesus' name, amen.